From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the campaign trail, where union leaders in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan were struggling in a way. As NPR recently reported, union leaders tend to view Donald Trump with suspicion. He's close with business leaders who are proud union busters, and generally speaking, Republican policies make it harder for workers to organize. And yet in the swing states, rank-and-file union members were often defying their organizations and rallying for Trump. USA Today also covered this story, saying, quote, "Union workers who defied their organization's endorsements of Kamala Harris and instead voted for Donald Trump helped hand him his victory in the manufacturing belt. They included steel workers who organized their support using a Facebook group that grew to thousands of people, and building tradespeople whose union president made trips throughout the Midwest trying to persuade them to vote Democrat. It's a stunning defeat for the Democratic Party, which for decades prided itself as the party of organized labor, and a victory for Trump, who has put the plight of working-class Americans center stage in his messaging." End quote. Now, USA Today talked to Richard Tyke, who works for U.S. Steel and is the vice president of Local 1557 Clareton Works, and he said, quote, "The steelworkers didn't leave the Democrats left the steelworkers," end quote. He went on to say that unions like tariffs. They want more of them. They expect to get massive tariffs under Trump. But Jimmy Williams, the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, toured swing states this year warning his members about Trump. He said Democrats promote more union-friendly policies than Republicans, but they aren't getting a great deal of support from his members. Williams told Gannett, quote, "It's this feeling, it's this economic kind of message that I think the Democratic Party doesn't do a good enough job of selling from the top. And I think our members have been completely put in the middle of that," end quote. Now, there is some data that shows some pretty conflicting ideas. Just a couple of weeks before the election, Pew Research released its newest polling on Americans and unions. A strong majority of Democrats in this country, nearly 75%, say that the decline in overall union membership is bad for the country and bad for workers. Democrats say they want more workers in unions. Meanwhile, nearly 60% of Republicans say that the decline of unions is good for the country and good for workers. They want fewer workers in unions. And yet Donald Trump says he will be a great president for unions, and union members voted for the Republican presidential candidate in higher numbers than any previous election in many years. So what do members of the local labor movement want next? What are some of the lessons here? I want to welcome them now. Maria Fisher is Political and Communications Director for Ask Me Council 66. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Evan.
Welcome to Christina Christman, who's President of the Federation of Social Workers. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, Rich Winter, Vice President of CWA Local 1170.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Patrick Coyle is Chief of Staff for the Rochester Labor Council. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Evan.
So these are, in some ways, I was joking for the program. I guess this is the union elite now, Maria Fisher, because, you know, we don't have a panel of rank and file members who defied what their leaders wanted and voted Trump. We're going to talk about some of this rift, although I don't know if you see it as a rift. What do you make of some of the, what we just talked about?
Well, I want to be careful calling us the elite. The people here at this table were voted by their membership. They came from the membership. So sometimes people will be like, well, what's the union going to do about this? And we're like, well, we're all the union. What are we going to do about this? So we want to change the thinking that people who got elected into positions, we came from the rank and file. That's who we are. That's who we will always be. And that's who we represent.
Are you surprised that Donald Trump could pull 40 plus, near 45% of union members?
Yes. Yes and no. So, you know, I knocked doors in Michigan, in Detroit. I knocked doors in Erie, Pennsylvania. I knocked doors in Syracuse. So a lot of us were around the country knocking doors. We knocked millions of doors. It's getting a little harder with Ring camera and having to explain into the camera what you're doing.
Yep.
But what we got, I feel like people are almost there. So I am finding a positivity, and I have a fire again. I took a sick day after Election Day. I needed to sleep and rest. And now I feel I have the fire. And what I did see and what I was hearing was, first, that people are very supportive of unions, whether or not it was a Democratic door, a Republican door, or a union door. So in Michigan, they don't actually register by party. So you didn't know what door you were going to. You just knocked doors. And so we didn't know necessarily who were we talking to, but I always wear my union shirt. That is who I am. It is in my soul. I always wear that on every door. And the response was very supportive. What I did hear was a very much anti-establishment feeling. People are understandably frustrated. We were told to go to college like me and saddled in student loan debt. You know, 29 million people in this country don't have a high school diploma. People are worse off than their parents. They can't buy a house. Millennials are more likely to be in low-paying jobs than their parents were. And so people are frustrated with the establishment. They're just, I feel frustrated with the wrong people. And so it is not the immigrant worker who has come to harm you. It's the people running the companies who bring immigrant workers and bring wages down. It is the people who are holding power and not allowing people to have the resources we need. And I feel this is the moment for people to get involved in unions, get involved in the labor movement, and let's build power together.
Christina Crispin, were you surprised by anything you saw in the election?
Yeah, a lot of stuff surprised me. First of all, I just want to point out that I don't think Trump won because more union workers voted Republican. I think the Democrats didn't show up in this election. I think some of the statistics show that maybe only 1% of more union workers voted Republican in this presidential election than the last one.
It's been a slow build for him, but that's true. It wasn't. He didn't get 50% more. I mean, he got a little bit better than he got against Biden, which is a little bit better than 2016. But yes, that's a good point.
And there's a variety of reasons why the Democrats didn't show up, especially the younger ones. Some of that was in protest to the Democrats' policies about Gaza. So who knows? If they would have showed up, it might have made the difference. But one of the biggest things that surprised me, I guess, about this election, or what was interesting to see, was when abortion rights were on the table, more people voted for abortion rights than voted for Harris, which I wasn't expecting at all. Like, that was interesting for me to take away.
Okay. Rich, what about you?
Trump is a master marketer. That's one thing. I don't like a lot of things about him, but to... you know, the background he comes from, and it seems he puts together and says things, you know, to appeal to these people. You know, he said, you know, about not taxing overtime and not taxing tips. And I'm really interested to see if that comes true and some of the other things. Bernie Sanders, who is a stalwart, you know, on the left, saying about reducing to 10% the credit card interest. So I'm really interested to see if Trump comes through on these things, and I think too many people hear little snippets of like that, and you know, to say rank and file workers, you know, the problem, like I get, is kind of like Maria said, oh, the union, they're the union, the officers, what's the union doing about this or that, and they wholeheartedly want you to protect their job and increase their pay and reduce the cost of health care and get all of these benefits, and then when we tell them like, hey, we need people in position to help us get that, they vote on gun rights or the immigration issue or other things like that. Like, that's not going to help us. And you know, if that's what you choose to vote on, religion, anything like that, obviously that's your prerogative. But then to come to us and say, hey, you're not doing a good job, or why are we paying so much for healthcare? Because all these businesses, you know, that's you know, what their thing is. And to believe, you know, Trump, you know, it was brought up about Project 2025, and he pretended he didn't know nothing about it. And now all of a sudden, he's put at least two, if not more, of the architects of that on his cabinet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's just an outright pathological liar, in my opinion. But people keep believing that. And
were your members split on him?
Not that I'm aware of. But, you know, in my industry,
there's got to be Trump voters.
Come yes, on. Absolutely.
Got to be.
But, you know, what I was going to say is, yeah, right, we have hunters. We have middle-aged, predominantly male workers. And, you know, I think he appealed to that. He's proven that, like, when he came to these young. But that's the ones that I'm trying to say. And I've said it before, way before this. I said, really, what unions are doing are slowly turning their members Republican because we get them good wages. And now they're more worried about their 401k and their taxes than they are about keeping her job and some other parameters. So, you know, where is that middle of everything, Republican and Democrat? I think the Democrats got lost in some of these far left issues that pushed out some of the people in the middle.
Somebody told me Rich Winter's going to come on your show and he will say anything. And so I appreciate the bluntness.
Yeah.
Thanks. So Patrick Coyle, Chief of Staff of the Labor Council, what did you see here?
I think Maria, you know, probably got the closest to where I landed, which is, you know, I think, you know, I don't know if it was Democrats staying home or part of the country moving rightwards, but like, I think it is very clear that, you know, there are people are frustrated with the way things are in this country, you know, and I think that was ultimately, you know, what could be explained a lot of it is frustration with the establishment. You know, it's if you're somebody whose rent has went up 30% in the last 4 years and whose grocery bill has went up 40% in that time, like, I don't, you know, would you say there was one party that was offering like a concrete solution, you know, to like pocketbook issues? I don't think they did. And, you know, this has been, you know, there's been a lot of realignments in the post-2016 political landscape, you know, but rich people becoming, you know, Democrats because of personal animus for Trump has pretty clearly had a market effect on the party's economic policy. And I thought, you know, you're starting to see people reckon with the effects of this. You know, Chris Murphy, had a long thread where he basically said, you know, Democrats cannot become the party of hedge fund managers. Antonio Delgado, a noted leftist radical. sorry, no sarcasm on the radio. But yeah. Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, who's, you know, would not be considered a firebrand by any means, had an op-ed in the New York Times this morning where he talked about, you know, Democrats have to stop leaving every solution to the market, you know, which can often be motivated by greed and is not always the way to solve people's problems. So, yeah, I think, you know, people are frustrated with the way things are, and that provides a great opportunity for those of us in the labor movement. You know, is there's a lot of people who will be sparked to organize their workplaces or to join organizing drives, you know, to try to better their working conditions. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of bad things will happen, but, you know, it's not – I don't think it's going to lead to the end of United States democracy.
Well, yeah. let me listen to a couple of things that Trump has said, and I'm very curious to know what the – the general union perspective is on stuff like this. The first comes from his much ballyhooed conversation with Elon Musk on Twitter and on X, whatever it is. And you'll hear Elon Musk at the start of this clip talking about how there's too much waste in government and we need to cut the waste and we need to be aggressive. And Trump loves that. But listen to where his mind goes, what he admires most about Musk and Musk's willingness to just fire workers if they go on strike. Let's listen.
I think it would be great to just have a government efficiency commission that takes a look at these things and just ensures that the taxpayer money, the taxpayers' hard-earned money, is spent in a good way. I'd be happy to help out on such a commission.
I'd love it
if it were formed.
Well, you're the greatest cutter. I mean, I look at what you do. You walk in and you just say, you want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay. You're all gone. You're all gone. So every one of you is gone and you are the greatest. You would be very good. Oh, you would love it.
It hit me that the first thing Trump is thinking about with cutting waste is telling a striking worker, hit the bricks. He views going on strike not as an indication that workers are troubled, that workers are not treated fairly, not paid fairly, but that they are disloyal and that they should be removed. And that seems antithetical to union ideals, although, again, he did pretty well with rank-and-file union members. How does that clip hit you, Maria?
I mean, I've heard it, obviously. It's not surprising to me, but I don't think he's the only one who feels this way. Like, striking workers and workers are an annoyance to people who just want to accumulate money and don't care about child labor laws, like the Hyundai plant and places like that. I've had conversations that were not that different in Rochester, New York, with a millionaire. And the developer said to me...
Who was it?
He'll know.
Job to ask.
He'll know if he's listening, and probably people at this table know. It was a tense meeting. And he said to me, you know, unions need to see the big picture. And I was like, the big picture isn't making you money. It's standing up for our workers. It's standing up for the marginalized groups our workers represent. And it's standing up for our jobs. And I sure as hell am not going to walk out of this room giving up any jobs.
There's well,
Go ahead, Patrick.
There's nothing more terrifying to, you know, two guys at the relative wealth levels of Elon Musk and Donald Trump than like an organized labor class that is, you know, militant and ready to go on strike at any time, right? Like it would be incredibly difficult for them to accumulate the level of wealth that they've accumulated with a union density that it even looks like, you know, in the 50s or 60s, you know? And so I think like that is both of them, you know, even if they might not couch it in those terms, intrinsically understand that like the more people are organized and active in labor unions, the worse it is going to be for billionaires.
Hold on. So let me do my best to actually push back. I'm going to channel what I think Musk might say. I think he might say, I'm not scared of unionizing. I'm scared of a labor class that doesn't get it, that doesn't get that you can go on strike and demand more, but margins are already thin, and we'll get to a point where we can't pay anybody. And you should just be grateful.
I just, you know, it'd be one thing if the executives of those companies were living like monks, you know, and he was too. But, you know, I don't know, the guy just spent $44 billion on a website. Like, you know, I don't think it'll be easy for him to cry poverty at any point. You know, I see, right. You see how much those stocks are worth.
One of the greatest things, I worked with somebody, you know, back in the early day of my career, and we had an opportunity maybe not to finish out the day the strongest. And the guy said, well, the company has to make money too. So we had to kind of bust our butt the rest of the day and get that done. And that always has stuck with me. So nobody expects wages or benefits to the point of the company's not making money. But to say that the margins are thin, where's the industrial accountant or the forensic accountants to say that? Because all of these companies, you know, make money to that point, you know. So when you really look at it, for them to say, you know, Bezos doesn't like, you know, unions because he's worth $100 billion and he can't pay. I mean, come on. That's not true for Amazon or for Musk or Tesla. Isn't Tesla worth more than Ford, GM, and Toyota combined or something?
Thanks to a lot of government funding, by the way.
Right. So, I mean, for people to say, oh, we can't pay the workers.
I wonder if Musk will think that the subsidies that Musk gets are inefficient.
Yeah. I mean, nobody ever comes up with that.
I wonder.
No one ever goes after the Pentagon budget either. That's the thing, right? You know, every time they're like, oh, we got to, you know, look at government spending, but, you know, not the part that's the single biggest piece of the pie. You know, it always ends up, well, I think we shouldn't do Medicaid, you know, for children anymore, you know, and it never is like, maybe we should shovel slightly less money into the Pentagon.
Well, I always have a disclaimer. Patrick Coyle, mildly sarcastic. But no, I think that was actually very direct, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was direct. That was direct. Before I turn to Christina, let me just follow up with Rich on a point here, though. I mean, what you're saying is, look, you've heard this for years from executives, that you can't go on strike. The margins are too thin. We won't be able to pay anybody. The company will fold. Just be grateful. Take what you get. You've heard that.
Yes.
Your colleagues in unions across the country have heard that. I understand what you're saying. But there's something psychological going on here. When Donald Trump runs for president the first time and he calls John McCain a loser because he got shot down serving the country, and veterans increased their support for Trump. And then Trump runs for president again and he says union workers who strike are basically losers. They're ungrateful.
Right.
Fire them. And he gets more union support. What's happening here? Do you feel like you're out of touch with your members?
Or the members are out of touch sometimes with reality, because to listen to a guy that's, you know, for so long, look at what he's done to workers. So, you know, for workers to vote for him, it's unfathomable to me based on his record. You know, when you say, you know, actions speak louder than words, his actions were when he was in Atlantic City, you know, going bankrupt and not paying workers, not paying anybody, and saying what? Sue me. If you don't like it, sue me. So saying the same thing, that's his attitude. So why people believe him or what they're voting on, you know, I'm so focused on my job, you know, and providing for my family and getting it through that. Like, that's number one to me. If other people are thinking of other things, but why you vote against that, I don't really know.
It seems like, Christina Christman, it seemed like the first time Donald Trump ran for president, 2015, 2016, there were a lot of stories that companies, that workers shared about how they would do work for one of Trump's companies and then they'd get paid half. And the response would be what Rich said, come after me, sue me. We've got more lawyers than you do.
Right.
And it seems like we hear that less now. I don't know if that just didn't resonate or if that just people didn't care. But when you hear Trump talking about firing striking workers, what do you think?
It's despicable. Not only did he talk about firing striking workers, but J.D. Vance actually crossed a picket line during this campaign. He published an editorial in a Pittsburgh newspaper. Those workers have been on strike for 2 years now. And he did that on purpose. There was no mistake about it, no misunderstanding. He picked that paper to publish his editorial because they were on strike.
But it didn't cost him.
It should have. You're right. It should have. And Trump's statements should have. I know that our union was very good about displaying that message and focusing on why our members should vote for candidates who valued our labor and labor's policies and their values. But I can't speak for everybody.
Yeah, I understand.
And it's an interesting thing. I'm sorry. But like what Christina just touched on about labor, and people don't realize that. Your labor is you. What you can do for work is a commodity that you control. And so to say for Trump, you know, to come out about tariffs, what is that about? Okay, you're protecting the product of United States manufacturers, but then you're against workers protecting their product, their labor. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think people don't ever really think of that. Your labor, your ability to go in and do a job and make a company money is, and your ability to withhold your labor, you know, is the crux of that. And it's just like businesses, when it benefits them, they want to take advantage of that or say that. But when it benefits the workers, it doesn't matter, or that's not true. So,
Maria, you want to add to that?
I think he's absolutely correct. I was just getting back to the Democrats are extremely bad at messaging, like extremely bad. I know you're rolling your eyes a little at me, Patrick, but like I really do feel like there are just ways to say things basically that are just easier for people to understand and touch them. Like one of the things that was very popular at the door was these Trump checks. And like people saw a check, it said had Trump's name on it. They thought it came from Trump. Like, and we don't think about things like how that's meaningful for people when you're really desperate and you're really suffering and all that people struggle and they saw the check. Now, did it really come from Trump? Of course not. Like, Congress pushed to have this money. That those symbolic things matter, that messaging matters, not to get convoluted sometimes in the messaging. I think there's an opportunity. You know, I John Stewart the other day, who I sometimes disagree with, but he said, you know, Republicans are playing chess, Democrats are in the nurse's office. And also like being like, well, you know, we'll follow the process and we'll follow this. Well, they're not doing that.
No,
so you need to fight back.
One of the first stories I covered when I moved to Rochester in 2003, I did a series of reports about congressional earmarks and the way that members of Congress use these member items, pork barrel spending, to come back to communities and win favor. And Congressman Tom Reynolds, he's out of politics. I don't know where he is. Don't yell at me now. I'm trying to remember the details. Maybe I should have said, anyway, I think it was Tom Reynolds. He came to a local public library with a check, a huge check for $100,000. And I pulled one of the librarians aside and I said, like, where do you think this money comes from? And like, from Tom.
Yes.
You know, it's like, everybody's like, comes from Tom. It's a gift from Tom Reynolds.
Right.
And I was like, no, no, it's not. But it was effective.
Yes.
It's effective. And what part of what you're saying, Maria, is that you think the Democrats sometimes are too high-minded or they sneer at some of what they think is clumsy ways of getting messages out, and then they lose.
Right.
So what's an example of what you think they can do better?
I think even having just keep beating the drum of raising federal minimum wage, like a lot of states in this country are below federal minimum wage or at it. Like people know right away, if you raise a wage, that's better for me. Like that's very simple. And why we haven't been beating that drum since 2009, the federal minimum wage has been $7.25. There is not a place in this country where anybody can live on $7.25. So why haven't we been just beating the, why haven't we first of all been fighting to raise it?
California rejected a minimum wage increase. California.
Yes.
The supposed.
Although they're
liberal
already
bastard.
above. They're above the.
Okay, so what you're saying their base is a lot higher.
Their base is a lot higher already.
So hammer $27.25.
Yes.
As an example. Patrick?
I'd like to offer some slight pushback, and that Maria saw me roll her eyes.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think this is one of my favorite hobby horses to get on, is that I think the critique that Democratic messaging is off base, it just does not land with me. Like, I don't think it's that Democratic messaging is any, more or less milquetoast, the same as Republican messaging. There's just not a multi-trillion dollar industry, devoted to reinforcing Democratic propaganda at every single level of people's lives, right? Like, and we could do a whole separate hour on this, but just like, I think that's really one of the understated, factors at play here is, whether it's social media sites, algorithmic feeds, like there are so many forces at life that, are devoted to just spreading right-wing propaganda to as many people as possible in ways that just are not. And I think a lot of what, people usually offer as a messaging critique is just really a reflection of people's information ecosystems.
So there was kind of, it almost became cliche. Should Kamala Harris have gone on Joe Rogan? Would that have saved the... Probably wasn't going to save the election.
Right.
But she should have.
But she should have.
Right.
Just as Donald Trump should have, just as J.D. Vance should have, just as John Fetterman did the week before the election, just as Tim Walz should have. The answer is yes. And as I've mentioned on this program, there was talk years ago of like, well, do the Democrats need their own Rush Limbaugh? And then they're like, Ed Schultz is going to be the Rush Limbaugh. And Ed Schultz had a career.
Yeah,
they had a career.
We've got Democrats' own Rush Limbaugh. He's on the mic with us right now.
What?
Who are you talking about?
Rich, obviously.
Rich Winter. Yeah. Okay. You're never getting invited back, Patrick Coyle. But listen, the reason I bring this up is, I just as someone who tries to understand where people get their information, I try to be a student of epistemology. And I acknowledge that at my age, I'm 45, I'm a little out of touch with where 20-something males are getting their information.
Right.
They're on YouTube a lot. They're on pods a lot. They're on places and platforms that I'm sometimes, but often not. And to just think that you're better than them, so therefore they should eventually, they'll learn as they get older, is a good way to lose them.
Right.
18 to 29-year-old males voted for Trump outright in this election.
Yeah, and then like that's
he
what
won the category.
Yeah, and they're getting their information, from like a totally non-traditional, news environment, whether it's from video games, like the fitness internet, like has a huge influence over people. Again, we're pretty far removed from, labor. I think this is a big factor, in the world right now is, how, captured by right-wing propaganda every single media infrastructure in the world is.
I don't think we're that far away from labor, because I think what brings it back is Maria's point is that Maria believes that on the whole, the Democratic Party is not perfect, but its policies for working people are better. And yet working people are not getting that message very well. And one of the reasons is the people who might deliver that message are just choosing not to go on platforms because they don't like them. They don't know them. They think they're better than them. Tyler Austin Harper said last week, and I don't know about this, but he said the Democrats aren't going to win until they nominate someone who'd be comfortable at a Tyson Paul fight. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, Rich, what do you think? You're smiling over there.
I don't know. I mean,
Ruben Gallego goes to those fights. John Fetterman does. Maybe Gretchen Whitmer probably does. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to think of what the list looks like. Is that the standard now?
Well, 60 million people in the United States watched it, even though it was terrible.
The worst fight in history.
And they needed Netflix. Needed
what do we stay up all night
tech.
For?
The prelims were really good.
The undercards were great.
Yeah.
But I mean, that just looked like a show to me too, with Trump and all of those guys. I don't know that they necessarily fit in, but I mean, that looks phony to me too. And why people don't see through that, I guess I don't understand.
Okay, so you're saying forget that, communicate better and be for the workers. Do you think the party moved too far left, the Democratic Party, on social issues?
I think that's possible. I think like you're saying, I think on both sides they focus on these hot button issues to get everybody riled up, and it affects a minuscule, number of people. But then they vote on that. And to say again, like for me, I get a paycheck every week, and that's important to me. And I want it to do better, and I want to pay less for healthcare. And instead of worrying about that, it's almost like the old magic trick, look over here at this or look at different things. And then you forget that, right, why are we paying so much for healthcare?
But Trump says he can be both. He can be for the working class and the management class. Can you be both?
No. I don't see
that. You
don't
think so?
No. You know, why did we have regulation? It almost feels like we're going back to, you know, the original industrial age with Rockefellers and all of those type of people that, you know, were robber barons. And that's when the rise came up. And I just think people forget that fight. Like, mm-hmm. like, and I think business is in it for the long haul. And they have these long range decade plans, you know, of how to achieve that. And I think people vote on what's in front of them right then, and they can't really relate to that.
I have to get our only break in, and then Andrew on the phone, I'm going to take your call right after the break. I've got another clip that I want to listen to that came before the election. We're talking about what's going on with labor and where labor wants to go. Before the hour's up, by the way, you're going to hear all of the guests say, regardless of who's president, regardless of who is in an administration, here's what they think has to happen for workers. Maria Fisher, political and communications director for Ask Me, Council 66. Patrick Coyle's chief of staff for the Rochester Labor Council. Christina Christman is president of the Federation of Social Workers. Rich Winter is vice president of CWA Local 1170. We'll come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, my colleague Matt DeTurk hosts the first hour, a conversation about the holiday movies we love and why they are such necessary distractions for us. I'm back on the mic in hour number two. NPR journalist Ari Shapiro is coming to Rochester with Alan Cumming with From a Broadway Career to Rochester. We'll talk to Ari Shapiro in our second hour on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Andrew on the phone. Hello, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hey, you guys. Okay, so, Evan, you were just saying, well, you know, Democrats have or unions have better policies for workers than Republicans. But what if the unions put the company out of business by having – I mean, look, you pay Starbucks workers $40 an hour. How does a small Starbucks shop on some side street or some, you know, Monroe Avenue or something stay in business if you have – seven people at $40 an hour, which, and I'm not anti-union, but you guys are too heavy-handed and you're not very good economists. You don't need to put people out of, which you're very happy to do, apparently, because, I mean, we saw what they did to the steel people in Pittsburgh 45 years ago. I mean, you have a bad brand of we don't care about if the company goes out of business, we just want our money because we don't like that the CEO makes a lot of money or something like that. You know, it's none of your business what your fellow workers make, and it's none of your business what the CEOs make. You got to make the business work. And there's a fine, you know, you got to be, I don't know, what's the word, commensurate with your pay and stuff. I mean, it's, I don't know. It's a lot of stuff. We could talk for hours about it, but that's all I got.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that. Let's go around the table. Rich, you want to start?
I don't think anybody's advocating for Starbucks workers to make $40 an hour. So, I mean, when you bring an example like that, you know, there's plenty of industries where, you know, that's why you bargain a contract. Yep. And you don't start at that level and you don't go from $15 an hour to $40 an hour, right? And, I mean, I'm not up to date on what Starbucks makes, but I'm sure.
But he says you're obsessed with what CEOs make. You got to get off that.
Why? Why isn't the CEO an employee of the company? What he makes? What, you know, it always gets me. One of my favorite analogies is a CEO that says, oh, you don't need a contract. You don't need a union to bargain a contract for you. But doesn't every CEO have a contract that has golden parachutes in it and has healthcare for life in it and has private cars and jets? And they have a contract. They have a lawyer that writes up their contract. But you're not supposed to do that. You don't need a contract. Because we're just going to take care
of you. The CEO, if a CEO has what you describe, the argument is that person is extraordinary at guiding the company and is deserving of an extraordinary level of pay and compensation.
We certainly saw that with Kodak, right? Like what a beaming example of brilliance at the top of that company. And that's why it's doing so well.
Well, Dan Karp and those, they've all done very well. Those CEOs over the years at Kodak, they've done very well.
The workers, not so much.
The workers, not so much. Yeah. Christina, what do you make of Andrew's points there? You're too obsessed with what the executives make. You're not good economists. You got to be more realistic.
I think that wealth inequality in our country is probably at the most dismal rates in decades and decades and decades, probably ever.
Centuries.
Yeah. It's easy to say that, but when you're looking at a CEO who's making 600 times more than what their worker is making, it's not fair. The workers are the ones doing the work. They're the ones making the profit for the company. The CEO can be a great leader, but they don't need to make 600 times more than what the worker's making. And it is our business to know that, since we're the ones putting in the labor.
Patrick?
Yeah. And I think Christina's got it exactly right, is that, you know, if you look at, you know, since the 50s and 60s, the rate of, you know, what the CEO, you know, to the average worker, you know, has gone up by an order of magnitude, right? We're talking like exponentially, you know, 20 or 30 times. And so, yes, it absolutely is, you know, the worker's business to know how much the CEO makes, to know the financial health of the company. And that's the other thing, right? Like, you know, the whole this idea that unions put people out of business, like, it's collectively bargained, right? Like, unions aren't agreeing on anything the company, by definition, did not also agree to, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I would just, I disagree with a few things he said, but we'll, that one in particular is one.
I think what he's saying
is,
yeah, you may be collectively bargaining it, but you're asking for pie in the sky and you're not realistic.
So why is that on the union and not the company for also agreeing to it, right? Like, you can ask for anything in bargaining, but, you know, as far as, like, what's in a contract that the company agrees to, I think there's some level of agency for everyone involved there.
So you think companies would agree to a set percentage, or if they made a profit, then they're going to share that back with employees? Companies have made huge profits, and they don't share that with the employees, right, on a regular basis because, oh, you have that contract, and we did better. So, right, we're not going to do it. And, what you know, you want to really start – digging into it, what about all these corporations that buy back their own stock, right? They didn't invest that in R&D. They didn't invest that in a better product or better workers or anything like that. They just bought their own stock back, which a lot of times that's owned by the executives and increases their wealth. So
I think I know where they're going to invest it. Crypto. Could be. I have another piece of sound that I want to listen to. This came from a conversation that happened at the Economic Club of Chicago. It happened a few weeks before the election. Donald Trump was interviewed by Bloomberg News Editor-in-Chief John Micklethwaite, and Trump was talking about auto factories in the United States. Let's listen.
And you know what they can do? The Mercedes-Benz will start building in the United States. And they have a little bit, but you know what they really are? Assembly, like in South Carolina. But they build everything in Germany, and then they assemble it here. They get away with murder because they say, oh, yes, we're building cars. They don't build cars. They take them out of a box, and they assemble them. We could have our child do it.
Okay. Maria, is he making a good point there?
I wish Dan Maloney was here.
I was just
going to
say, where's Dan Maloney when you need him?
President
put the bat signal out for Dan Maloney.
The work that happens in factories, and I've been in GM, I mean, we have to understand what's happening on factory floors. That work's really serious. There's a reason we take safety really seriously. There's a reason people were getting seriously injured at Tesla factories because they weren't, and why they were the worst of any car factory in the country. This work is serious. It's hard. It is people, you know, a person has died in the GM plant. Like, these are serious jobs that we need to be taking seriously. This work is important. It is.
He says a child could do it.
Well, unfortunately,
he probably wants a child to do it.
Unfortunately,
child labor laws.
Let me get that in. That's one of the big things. We've gone back to 1890 in a lot of states. Right. Child labor is a huge issue, and we should be talking about it. Children have been killed in poultry plants in this country. Children as young as 12 are working in Hyundai plants in this country, and they're often in Republican states. And one of the most important thing we do is keep people safe. And so when we have the attitude that these jobs aren't important, people die. Like, let's children are dying in plants today in 2024 in this country.
I mean, and nobody's going to call Trump a hypocrite because wasn't all his products made overseas? Now all of a sudden he's all pro-America.
His ties, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the guy, you know, I personally can't take anything he says seriously. So to say that then, you know, or to say tariffs are going to fix something overnight or bring work back, you know, that was decades and decades in the making. And that was politicians that allowed that work, allowed, and a lot of times, good-paying union jobs or just good-paying jobs, you know, where, you know, people without a college education could get a job to support a family. And that was all allowed to leave the country by our politicians. And now, you know, he's stumping that he's going to fix it. You know, he was part of the problem, and all the people, you know, that's a good point Maria brings up about these plants, and for him to rail on immigration or illegal immigrants taking jobs, who's hiring them? Every time you hear about a plant that gets raided for having undocumented workers, who owns that plant?
Right. And who gets punished for that?
Right.
Whenever you see there's a raid, it's people are getting deported, families are broken apart, desperate poor people. It's not the heads of that company.
Right.
You want to hold people accountable for hiring undocumented and paying people low wages and creating unsafe positions? Then go drag the CEO of that company out, arrest them, and handcuff them.
Anything you want to add, Christina Christman?
I just want to point out that in most of those other countries where that work is coming from, those companies are unionized. And they're very socialist countries. I just so right. Why don't our workers deserve to be in a union too and to be protected?
Right. So like Mercedes-Benz, that's a good point.
So the New York Times did a little forecasting about what could be coming from an administration, and I think it's fair to say there's still a lot of uncertainty. It's hard. I mean, that's kind of the hallmark of it, and some would say the advantage of a Trump administration. Public sector unions, the Times says, are concerned about an existential threat. Top advisors to Donald Trump want to eliminate public sector unions outright. And Teamsters, who, was pretty cozy with Donald Trump in this campaign, Kara Dennis, who is the Teamsters spokesperson, said, quote, "The Teamsters look forward to working with President-elect Donald Trump and to sharing with his transition team our priorities for how he can best support working Americans in the future of labor. The Republicans, under the leadership of Donald Trump, indicated throughout the campaign that they want to be the party of the working people. The campaign is over. It's time for Republicans to show up," end quote. Teamsters feels like they've got an in, and they're going to try to convince the Trump administration to be pro-worker. Patrick, you started to react there.
Good luck, you know, and I think, you know, there is a point, like, you know, the work of all of our unions will have to continue, you know, like we're not just going to be able to, you know, pack it in until 2028. Like there will be grievances to be heard. There will be, you know, contracts to be bargained for, you know, there will be organizing, you know, new shops to be done, you know, like, and you know, I don't begrudge them, you know, wanting to be, you know, friendly with any administration just to make sure. But yeah, like ultimately, you know, The law, you know, and the legalese can only take you so far, you know, like at some point it's about like how well you can organize your shop, you know, and how united your workers are.
Andrew had called back to say that Trump is going to create a lot of big businesses that will need union workers, which is why union people are voting for Trump.
I mean, a lot of his businesses have gone bankrupt, so we'll see. But like if he's able to do that, you know?
I think he said that part of his economic plan is to tank the economy.
No, I don't think he's going to. No, Elon Musk said that there's going to be pain in the short term, that what the Trump administration incoming will do could cause some short-term pain for long-term gain.
Yeah, but how long before the election did he say that? Did Musk say that before the election?
I think he's been saying that.
Yeah, I think he has.
Yeah,
it's interesting because, like, you know, normally when politicians tell people the truth, they don't vote for him. You know, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to have the pain or to get rid of this deficit or to adjust Social Security. And when anybody says that, they get voted down. So I really am curious why people.
Okay. So it doesn't sound like you buy the idea that Donald Trump's going to create a bunch of these big new businesses and unions are going to have a boon.
No.
Absolutely not.
I'll give Andrew a call in 4 years and we can chat about it and see. Okay.
I mean, I hope the Teamsters and other unions hold Trump. That's what I said at the beginning, you know, about him making comments about not taxing overtime and not taxing tips and cutting credit card interest to a maximum of 10%. And I have no faith that he's going to live up to that because he has never proven, you know, in the past that he's going to do that. So I don't know. You know, to say he's going to create businesses, there's no track record of him doing that. So,
if he does, great. You know, I think like none of us would say no, you know, to a more prosperous country, you know, and a workforce that works for everybody, you know. Now, but, it, you know, if it's a workforce, you know, where workers are making, you know, near minimum wage and working in deeply unsafe condition, you know, as top executives, you know, just continue to make money hand over fist. Obviously, that's not a world any of us want to see.
Well, so. Jimmy Williams, the president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, told the New York Times, quote, "The Democratic Party did not make a positive case for why workers should vote for them, only that they were not Donald Trump, and that is not good enough anymore," end quote. So let me go around the table. You're nodding, Patrick. I'll start with you. What do you, regardless of who is president, regardless of who is in the administration, what does have to happen next?
I just think offering real solutions to the problems in people's lives, you know, and I think that was their fundamental failure is, you know, just like trying to say to the voters, like, no, everything is going well, you know. And Trump offered solutions, whether those solutions are, you know, solutions I would agree with or realistic by this, you know, the American government we have, like no one can say that he didn't acknowledge people's problems, you know, and offer solutions to them. And that's just, you know, I think understanding the pain and, you know, that the problems that people are having and trying to offer concrete solutions to help them in their, you know, short-term everyday lives.
So what are some of those solutions, Rich? What do you want?
It's a big question.
Key to the castle.
We're doing a third hour.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, right, for, you know, like CWA or the unions, you know, passing PRO Act to get people to be able to join unions. You know, it is a weird disconnect because unions are in favor by all accounts, by a majority of
people. Two-thirds.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe the Democrats saying, like, we're going to make it easier to join a union. You know, like, look at the fight that the Starbucks and other areas go through and fighting in each individual store and fighting these massive union-busting lawyers at these corporations all have money to pay for without going out of business, you know, and corporate money and politics back to 2010 Citizens United, where they ruled businesses could donate money as a person. Like who finds that reasonable, that businesses can donate unlimited amounts of money to politicians? Who are the politicians beholden to then? The businesses, not people.
So you're saying start with being very direct, saying we're going to make it easier for you to organize.
Correct.
And we're going to oppose anything that makes it harder to organize.
Correct.
Because you think, as you look at the polling, to Maria's point, roughly 2/3 of Americans favor expanded union membership. They think union membership is good for the economy, good for the country. That number, by the way, is fueled by massive support among Democrats. It's a smaller opposition in terms of data on each side with Republicans, but Republicans still say unions are bad for the country, which is interesting because more union members are starting to vote Republican.
Right.
But so it's an interesting dynamic. But you're saying make it easier to organize. Be explicit about that. Mm-hmm. Tell workers, we're on your side. You can organize. Okay, Christina?
Yeah. So sorry, I lost my train of thought. Can you repeat the question?
What do you want? Your keys to the castle policy-wise. Doesn't matter who's president. What do you want to see happen next?
Well, definitely, I think, to Maria's earlier point, I think the Democrats did have bad messaging, do have bad messaging to a point. I don't think that they actually gave all of the examples of the way Trump hurt unions in his first term. A lot of that they felt like people should know already, I think, and they didn't really list them out. Definitely attacked protections that OSHA had for us. And he's going to probably, well, they've already set the groundwork to do that again. So I think we need to increase protections, especially with OSHA and PESH. We're public sector, so for us it would be PESH.
Are you worried about this administration going after public sector unions?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they already did. In 2017, we had the Janus decision, which directly impacted us in all of the public sector. He's definitely going to come after the federal workers. We know that. He did before. Biden kind of went back on that. He's going to just come after it again. I think the Democrats have had opportunities to combat some of the things that they know is going to come, and they haven't. I wish they would act a little bit more aggressively. I think overall, the Teamsters, even though they are trying to play in the middle. They're going to feel the pain as much as us. I mean, he's going to take away the general counsel for the National Labor Relations Board, who is very union friendly. She came from CWA. That's probably going to be the first person he replaces. It's going to change the whole outlook, the future of unionizing, especially new organizing. They're definitely going to roll back that some of those groundbreaking decisions where if the company interferes too much, they automatically get a union. Like, that's gone. It's
okay.
Yeah.
And Maria, about 90 seconds here. Your colleague just mentioned Democratic messaging. Two of the messages that were sometimes heard was, to people who are hurting, no, actually the economy's good. You're saying that's not a good message. Or, hey, it's worse in other countries. Also not all that helpful.
I think I'm going to make a different point.
Okay,
that's okay,
sure.
So since this is the last point, I'd really like to see more union members running for office and the Democratic Party and any party really thinking about taking from rank and file workers, from linemen to line cooks, yeah. From social workers to sanitation workers. There is somebody about who has lived an experience that connects with people. And union leaders, like, we are fighters, and there are people like that. People like somebody who will fight. There are people who voted for AOC and Trump. She sent that out. Like, and a lot of people came back, they voted for both because they seem like they're fighters and they seem authentic. And so I think this is a really good opportunity to start recruiting people who are actual workers day to day to be running for office.
By the way, some of what Maria just described is why there are people who supported Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. That, look at a little bit of that horseshoe idea, or just the desire for authenticity, whether you like it or not, is a powerful idea. We'll see. Let's come back and talk in 6 months and see how things are going.
Okay, sounds great.
You're all welcome. And somewhere, Dan Maloney, his ears are burning. And Dan is welcome back whenever he wants. But I appreciate the conversation. Maria Fisher, Political and Communications Director for Ask Me Council 66. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Christina Crispin, President of the Federation of Social Workers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rich Winter, Vice President of CWA Local 1170. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick Coyle, Chief of Staff for the Rochester Labor Council.
Always great to be here, Evan.
Thank you very much. That's sarcastic again. Hey, from all of us at Connections, thank you for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.